What would Benjamin Franklin do? You may never have asked yourself this question when making a life decision, but maybe you should, because Ben Franklin was not only one of America's founding fathers, but as a diplomat, inventor, publisher, humorist, and philosopher, he was a paragon of curiosity and purposeful living. So why not take him as a model for your own life, as Eric Weiner does in his new book, Ben and Me, In Search of a Founder's Formula for a Long and Useful Life. Eric is the author of the New York Times bestsellers, The Geography of Bliss and The Geography of Genius. He's a former international correspondent for NPR, and his work has appeared in The Atlantic, National Geographic, The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, and the best American travel writing. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, I'm Eric Weiner, author of Ben and Me, In Search of a Founder's Formula for a Long and Useful Life. I wrote this book because I was approaching a major life milestone, a birthday where the number 6 featured prominently. I was feeling adrift, looking for a lifeguard. Why not Ben Franklin? Like most Americans, I thought I knew him, or at least the basics: founding father, electrical experimenter, unrepentant flirt. It turns out I didn't know jack about Ben. He was much funnier, wiser, and more three-dimensional than I imagined. More relevant, too. He is the least dead of America's founders and a tonic for our troubled times. Franklin's life supplies much-needed lessons about aging, altruism, political compromise, fresh air, anger management, music, and much more. He was no saint, but I'm convinced the world would be a better place and we'd all be a bit happier if we imbibed the wisdom of Benjamin Franklin. Here are 5 key insights from my book. Insight number 1. Bracket your day with 2 essential questions. Ever since he was a young printer's apprentice, Franklin began and ended his day with 2 vital questions. In the morning, he'd ask, "What good shall I do this day?" And in the evening, "What good have I done today?" Simple questions, yet few of us bother asking them. The truth is, we're ambivalent about leading useful lives. We claim it's what we strive toward, yet grumble that so-and-so is just using us. Being the kind of person whom others regularly use is seen as a character flaw. But maybe, Franklin suggests, it is the highest compliment. Rather than avoiding being used, why not invite it? Yes, please, use me. While we take an inside-out approach to self-improvement, Franklin preferred outside-in. He emphasized actions, not motives. Not what good thoughts or feelings did he have that day, but what good did he do? Results, not intentions, matter to him. Usefulness was his religion. Might it be ours, too? Insight number 2. Be a genuine fake. Authenticity. We're told it is the highest ideal, that our essential task is to live an authentic life, to find our real self, as if it's gone missing, like our car keys or a wayward sock. To call someone inauthentic is to accuse them of acting in bad faith, as the philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre said, and suggest they are somehow immoral. So seemingly self-evident is the primacy of authenticity that we rarely question it. But what if it's not true? What if there is no authentic self defined, only a collection of masks in various shapes and sizes? This was the way of Ben Franklin. He wrote under dozens of pseudonyms or anonymously. This tactic helped him launch his many projects from hospitals to schools. Only later, when the proposal had garnered support, would Franklin come forward and remove his mask. Franklin was what the philosopher Alan Watts called a genuine fake. Genuine fakes are not con artists, and they are not deluded. Genuine fakes so fully inhabit their roles, there's no distance between part and person, mask and face. What matters is not the kind of masks we wear, but how well they fit and to what use we put them. Insight number three, redirect your anger. Everyone experiences anger, and Ben Franklin was no exception. Rarely, though, did his adversaries feel his wrath. He knew that wouldn't be useful. He didn't deny or ignore his anger, but he worked hard to master it, lest it master him. That was a luxury he could not afford. His power lay in his ability to persuade, and raw anger never persuaded anyone of anything. One technique Franklin deployed was the placebo letter. He would write an irate letter, then wait 24 hours before mailing it. More often than not, he wouldn't send it, or would dispatch a revised, softer version once the thunderstorm of anger had passed. Franklin discharged anger the way his lightning rod discharged electricity, through deflection. Patience was the key. He waited for the storm of fury to pass so he could see more clearly. Franklin's mastery of anger enlarged his range of motion and of possibilities. Anger-proof, he could engage in heated debates without fear of fire breaking out. He could dine amicably with political rivals and maybe, just maybe, find common ground. Franklin knew what many of us seem to have forgotten, our capacity to tolerate anger, to feel it without acting on it, broadens our world and opens doors previously shut. Insight number four, flip the power dynamic. While still a young man, Franklin stumbled on a fascinating quirk of human nature. He was serving as clerk to the Pennsylvania Assembly, and a powerful new member of the Assembly threatened to make life miserable for him. What to do? Franklin could have kowtowed to the man and attempted to win him over with flattery. He took a different approach. Having heard that the man owned a rare and valuable book, Franklin asked if he could borrow it for a few days. The man agreed, and Franklin returned it dutifully with a nice note. The two became fast friends. Franklin's conclusion? The best way to endear yourself to someone is not to do them a favor, but to induce them to do a favor for you. It sounds counterintuitive, even a bit loopy, I know. Wouldn't we prefer those who do us favors? Not necessarily. As Franklin discovered, and recent studies confirm, the opposite is true. We don't like people who are nice to us. We like people to whom we are nice. Why? One explanation is cognitive dissonance. It's difficult to hold two contradictory thoughts at the same time. It makes us uncomfortable. We resolve this tension by changing our mind. I don't like Joe, but I'm doing a favor for Joe, so maybe I do like him after all. There is a simpler explanation. We like being useful, so we like those who give us the opportunity to do so. Insight number five, lighten up. When the delegates at the Second Continental Congress were casting about for someone to draft the Declaration of Independence, they considered Benjamin Franklin. It made sense. He was an accomplished writer and a highly respected statesman and philosopher. But the delegates nixed the idea. They were afraid he would insert a joke. It was not a baseless fear. Inserting a joke into America's founding document is just the sort of thing Franklin would do, not out of disrespect, but to lighten a perilous historic moment and to encourage ordinary Americans to read the document. Humor makes us pay attention. Franklin knew that humor also softens hard truths and lubricates relationships. He used humor as a billboard, an entree, a shield, a diversion, a balm, and a weapon. He used humor to conceal his shyness. He used humor to make a point without offending and to air serious differences without losing a friend. He used humor to expose injustices and perhaps most of all, to relieve unbearable tension. It is impossible to laugh without exhaling. I hope you've enjoyed these five insights from my new book, Ben and Me, and that they've whetted your appetite to learn and read more. Thanks and goodbye.
Thank you, Eric. That was Eric Weiner with five big ideas from Ben and Me, in search of a founder's formula for a long and useful life. Also check out our book bite for Eric's previous book, The Socrates Express, in search of life lessons from dead philosophers. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have an amazing day.